Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of September 26th. I'm John Gibson, and with me this evening on a Saturday is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Yeah, it's like Saturday's our thing now.
And Saturday night, man. It's all right for whatever you said last week.
Indeed it is. Yeah, well, I'm still on vacation, so I'm still off on Saturday. So anyway, which was kind of fun because we had all these day games today and some interesting games during the week. So it's going to be fun.
Right, right. Except for the sirens going on in the background. Everything's good here. But we're all saddled up and we're ready for the final home stretch of the season. On the show, we've got an interview with Rick Vandenhurk of the Hawks. We're going to talk about SoftBank and the Fighters and the PL and CL playoff teams and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, so although I am technically on my vacation, I did go up to Cebu Dome, Cebu Prince Dome, the park that will someday formerly be known as Prince.
Oh, that joke gets better the more times you say it, not.
Hashtag hi.
Okay. And I went up to Cebu Dome, and I had a chance to talk to a couple of the Cebu Lions and a couple of the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks guys, and it was kind of fun. I learned, before I get into the meat of the interview here, I learned that Ernesto Mejia's new son is called Alfonso.
Oh.
And I asked him why he didn't name his son Homer.
Oh, that's a good one.
And apparently for Ernesto, Homer's just too common.
Just too common. Only if you're Ernesto.
Or, yeah, yes, indeed.
For me, it'd be like K, strikeout indeed. Or something like that.
Okay. So anyway, we hadn't spoken in a long, long time, so that was great catching up. And I'd gone up there actually to interview Tsuyoshi Wada, who continued my run of the large number of players I've gone to speak to on days they were deactivated.
Mm.
I did listen to him because he met the press, but there was no continuation of our interview from about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Nope. But I did have a nice chat with Seiichi Uchikawa.
Okay.
Who's a very gracious and also a very thoughtful guy. And also got Rick Vandenhurk, which is another people I was really looking forward to talking to. I had seen Rick just before the All-Star break, either at the beginning of June or the end, the beginning of July or the end of June.
Right.
And he was all set to come back. And he had a couple of setbacks. He had one setback, before that, and his rehab was put back on the table, and he was finishing his next rehab, and everything was good, and he had another setback.
Mm.
So he made his return to the first team mound the other day, and he's going to start tomorrow at Cebu Dome, and he pitched quite well. Now, in his two seasons now since he came over here from the Korean Baseball Organization in South Korea, Vandenhurk is 15-1 with the first team.
Unbelievable, yeah.
And 5-1 on the farm team. So anyway, we had a few things to catch up on, but it was again mostly about Rick gets really excited about being back and about baseball, and I think that all comes out really well. And almost like he's so excited, there's very little else that comes out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a listen to our brief chat.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is once more Rick Vandenhurk of the SoftBank Hawks. It's great to see you.
Yeah, thank you. Great to see you.
Yeah, I know. We caught up a little bit at Tokyo Dome during the summer, and right. It looked like you were almost going to be back, and that was like 3 months ago.
Yeah, it was. You know, had two setbacks, but I'm back, so.
Yeah, you had a neck and this and that and the other. I called it a smorgasbord. Is that kind of accurate?
No, you know, it's a tough what happened. You know, I was dealing with a nerve and things.
Oh,
and,
okay.
So it just kind of popped back in there twice, and when I was close to coming back, so it happens.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you were on the farm. So you were on the farm pitching. How many starts did you make before you came up and won your seventh game the other day?
I pitched twice in the minor.
I saw one was the 3 innings, the other was a 5.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay. And how comfortable were you with those outings coming back? Were you all ready to go?
It's a little bit quicker maybe than usual, but my body was in good condition, so that was the most important.
Oh, you mean the time between that start and this one?
What do you mean?
What was quicker?
No, you mean the 2 starts, the comeback.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah. Normally it would be a little longer.
Yeah, just maybe build it up a little differently, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it looked good when you came out here.
Thank you.
You had a bunch of strikeouts. You didn't walk a bunch of guys. So.
Thank you. That's a good feeling.
Yeah, I'll bet. So obviously, this team must be thinking, man, you're a sight for sore eyes because, you guys are, unlike last year, you're in the heat of a pennant race.
Right.
And people have been dropping.
It's exciting times, we're right there. So I'm sure we continue looking at just one game at a time and just focusing on today and what we can do today, and then we'll see how it plays out,
Now, obviously, you guys have this team has a lot of experience in this kind of thing.
Yeah, we do.
And obviously, the other thing is when people get hurt, you've got a lot of guys on the farm who are used to having these chances to come up and play, and there's a lot of good players down
right.
there.
We do. Yeah, we do.
Obviously, they won their 5th straight Western League champion. Were you there when they won?
No, I wasn't.
Oh,
no.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I wasn't, yeah.
Because, you pitched some of those guys. I know you won 5 games down there last year for them. So.
Right.
So now, tell me about this pennant race. Now, obviously, last year was kind of a snooze going, it was a case of, how many games can we win after we won the pennant?
Right.
But this year is completely different.
It is, and that's what baseball makes baseball so great. Every year is different, and we just have to focus, on, like I said, on today. And you can't buy into it too much. We just have to continue to play good baseball and focus on the little things,
okay.
to get the victories, and then we'll see where we go.
Fighters, not some of the little things didn't get done, and two big losses.
Those are tough losses, but that's also baseball, and we have the team and we have the experience to come back and bounce back, and I'm sure we will. So,
and they're a heck of a team this year too.
Yeah, they are, and we are too, so we're right there,
yeah. You come in, as you said, it was just 2 starts coming before you came into your first team, your first game with the first team. What kind of things did you take out of that? What kind of things, adjustments, you think, I've got to still do this, or I've got to work a little bit more on that?
Well, the most important thing was obviously my body conditioning. And once you're out there, there are certain things that you want to do as a pitcher, and you just focus on doing that. And then continue to work the hitters and continue to get a feel for your pitches and locate the pitches and certain situations, and there's many aspects to it. So.
Okay. The last thing I guess everybody wants to know is there anything in your back of your mind, because you did have these weird setbacks just when you were ready to come back
right.
to the first team twice.
Right.
How can I say this? Did you have that on your radar? You were thinking the feeling about the nerve or something?
No, I don't now, but at that time I wasn't either. And it's just unfortunate that it happened, and it sucks obviously when it does. And, you can't do anything, and that's a tough thing. And you're on the sidelines and then you're watching, the games, and you're not part of that, and that's tough as well. But I just got to stay positive, and I stayed positive. And looking forward, I'm back now and just want to continue, to help the team in any way possible.
So you're back, and also Setsu pitched well. I mean, the 3rd straight year he's gone down in the middle of the season. And you were with him on the farm last year, I think, before you came out. And then he came back and he pitched great in September. He's done that the past 2 years, and he pitched well the other day.
Right.
So
he's a very good pitcher. He's got a lot of experience. He's done it all in this game, and it's obviously good to have a guy like that,
So it looks like you guys are, like you said, you know who's here, you know what you got, you know what you got to do.
Yeah, and we just got to prepare for today and make it happen.
And the Lions have been playing well recently, so it's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's of course, absolutely.
Okay, well, anyway, thanks a lot and good luck.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll be seeing you when it's all done and finished again.
Sounds good, man.
Okay, take care, guys.
All right, you too.
Yep.
Okay, thanks, Rick. Always a great to have you on the show. It's about the third, or I think it's the third time we've had you
on
the
second,
show.
It's the second as far as I remember. I remember you did a talk with him last year.
Right.
And that's all we had on the show.
Oh, we didn't have him at the end of the Japan series.
Maybe we had some comments from him.
Oh, okay.
I didn't really, wouldn't count that because you probably were in the scrum, I believe.
No, I was on the field, but it was noisy and he was just saying, rah, 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 rah. Okay. So anyway, thanks for being on the show. And so what things come to mind listening to Mr. Vandenhert?
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting him one day. I haven't even gotten a chance to meet him because
the
2 times that I was out to see SoftBank this year, he wasn't around. And right. So I haven't met him yet. So what I heard, I there was literally nothing in the entire chat that made me perk up, maybe. I mean, nothing. And it wasn't your fault. I think you talked as much as he did. And I just heard in his voice, I heard frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard some kind of par for the course answers to questions before you actually even answered them, before you even asked them. And in fact, he was answering a statement that you made with a cliche before you even finished getting it out. And it was, and once he let you finish, he still answered with the same cliche. So, you know, it just sounded to me like a player, because this was just before after they had lost the 2 games to the Fighters this past week. Mm-hmm. And I guess the team was kind of feeling down. In particular, he's feeling down because he had just come back. We said that he was going to pitch in last week's show, and he ended up pitching that later on Sunday last week. So the only thing, I guess, that made me listen a little bit closer was the injury situation, because I guess now I'm never going to trust the SoftBank injury report, which is similar to what Bill Belichick, with the coach of the Patriots in the NFL, does, and he just puts the bare minimum or something that's close to the injury but not the actual injury, because we were told early on it was fatigue, which I started to complain about early on, and then we started hearing other reports about
you were complaining of fatigue as well. podcasts are brutal, listeners.
When you combine them with a job, a full-time job, and all the other stuff. But he didn't sound very happy, and he talked about the nerve thing. I think I read something else. He said other ailments. I don't even remember what I read. It has been so long, and there was, I just thought it was odd that fatigue would keep him off the mound this long. And
it wasn't. He was pretty much ready to go after about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about when I saw him. I was quite surprised to see him. And because I hadn't heard he had even pitched with the farm team, but they were, I think, all ready to activate him when I think he said that a nerve in his neck popped out.
Yeah, I didn't.
And the same thing, he's never felt it before, and they didn't know what to do, and they were treating it extra carefully. And that was it might have been the same day I talked to him, or the day before I talked to him, I don't remember. But he said it's like it was. He was about to come back, and then he just went. It just went back to square one, and then he told me yesterday, yeah, I went back to square one twice.
Right.
And as fatigue, they didn't really have a clue. They said it was kind of a probably fatigue because they didn't have an answer. It was a variety. I think he had some tightness in different body parts, so they thought, oh, we'll just give him a rest.
Right, right.
But I asked him, he said, no, it had nothing to do with the, I asked if it was due to his being through the full conditioning program here, because he had been hurt last year in spring training and missed some of the full brunt of the Hawks' full force.
Which is a great question, yeah.
And he said, no, I went through that all. It was after spring camp that I was out. During the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
So his second time he's done it, he didn't have any troubles, and he was cruising. He was pitching really well at the start of the season, and then bam, he had a bad start, and he had a couple of pretty rough starts, and he took his first loss, and then they deactivated him, and we haven't seen him for basically 4 months since.
Right, right. So I mean, he was great on the show last year, and you know, thank you again for doing the interview, and the interview was okay, but I'd swear he was either preoccupied with either game preparation or just, I mean, he just wasn't all there. There was something going on.
I think he was gassed. I think, you know, he said, I don't know if it got on the interview or if it was when we were speaking before, he said he was a little, you know, just from the being back, he was, I think, physically not up to being starting yet. He hadn't stretched out long as much as he would have liked. And that at the end of his last start, he said he felt a little, he felt a little fatigued.
I don't want to use,
I don't want to drop the F bomb there, but no, he said he was feeling it at the end of his start. And I think he was feeling it in between starts. And so I think he was eager to get in and get some nourishment.
Right, right.
Whatever it is, the Sabre Lions, the stadium staff, you know, brings in on trays there for the visiting players.
Right. Sandwiches. So,
yeah, pretty much, and bananas and such. And
but, other than that, it just, like I said, the injury situation was the only thing that really stood out to me in that chat. And, you know, I can understand that they were not feeling at their best coming off of that series. They tried to win it, obviously, and the Fighters swept them. They played two good games. So he kept saying things like, well, that's baseball, that happens, we just have to go out and play the next game. And I mean, all these things that, you know, a defeated team says to motivate itself to keep going and to push hard. And you know, if whether he was preoccupied with something else or worried about nourishment or having an F-bomb for fear of dropping another F-bomb. He was a little bit worn out from the workout, whatever it was. He just didn't seem to have the energy. But of course, they played well and they won the two games in Sabre Land.
Right. Well, he was just so... He certainly did see, well, first of all, he's a genuinely enthusiastic person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is that, and part of it is, you know, he was so happy to be back and with the first team, and, you know, and he was so frustrated not being able to play when it seemed like he was on the verge of being able to play.
Mm.
And all you can do is wait. And so I think he was quite sincere. In fact, I tell you, when I spoke to Uchikawa about maybe a few minutes before that, he was also very, very, I mean, he's a pretty upbeat guy, but, you know, I get the feeling the Hawks are really, they're really excited to be where they are. You know, they're sort of like going, oh, come on, bring it on. Well, I don't want to say they're fighters because they're not Nippon Ham, but you know what I mean. They're battlers, and they feel like they finally got a challenge. They haven't had a challenge for 2 years,
right? Yeah, that makes sense.
And they're ready for one. And it's not like they dropped the ball like they did 2 years ago. You know, well, you know, when the bullpen was wiped out. I didn't get a chance to. I really wanted to ask Dennis Sarfate, because the last time I saw him at Cebu Dome 3 weeks ago, he said he was running on fumes.
Right.
But he looked pretty. He's looked livelier since. Mm. So I don't know. But I guess it was interesting because I knew he was. He was down there pitching in a lot of the same games as Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Oh yeah, Rick was.
Rick was. So we talked about that briefly, and, you know, and the other guys coming back. So I think, you know, they're ready to go with that. And he didn't know that Wada was being deactivated. And I told him, and his face kind of like, oh, great. That's all we need now.
Right, right.
but, you know, he said pretty much they have, especially these guys like Rick, who spent a lot of time on the Hawks farm team.
Mm-hmm.
They know how good those guys down there are, and the Hawks did just win their fifth straight Western League title.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of confidence in whoever the team puts on the field. I don't think it's misplaced, or at least it's genuine. It's not like it's not like, oh, well, we just have to hope everyone can do their job. I think they think, oh, man, let's, you know, they're also a little bit excited to see what these kids can bring.
Right. Well, let's talk about what they did on Wednesday and Thursday this past week. I enjoyed these final two games in the Ham Hawk series, the final two games of the regular season, at least. And they played at Yahoo Oku Dome, and the Fighters swept both games, and it was thoroughly entertaining with a surprising outcome, if you ask me. I think Shohei Ohtani winning game one the way he did, going eight strong innings. The only run he allowed was unearned because he threw away a ball. I think it was unearned. At least it should have been.
It was unearned.
He threw a ball in the center field, and other than that, he would have pitched eight shutout innings, and they end up winning that game. And it was 2-1. Yeah, I didn't think the Hawks were going to miss Yuki Yanagita this much, but the lineup seemed to have no punch and no intimidation factor, I thought, in the series. And I thought that was the key. I just thought there's nobody they really need to pitch around. And if they do pitch around one guy, I don't think the Hawks are comfortable with the matchup if they do get somebody pitched around. Whereas before, it just seems, and I always say it's only one guy, it's not going to make or break your team, but I just think the way the lineup was constructed and the way guys are playing right now, that it just kind of made a difference, I thought.
Well, what was the Fighters' intimidation factor?
Their intimidation factor is they can get an extra base hit from anybody in the lineup and maybe turn that into a triple. And I think Shohei Ohtani, you look at the way they pitched him, I thought he was an intimidation factor. I think Sho Nakata, although I think they want to challenge him because, like you've said, he's got this habit of going into these, not slumps, I would say, if you're talking about a series, but just going into situations where he just doesn't make good contact, doesn't have good swings. And I just, you know, I'm looking at him as an opponent. I'm like, well, I can get him to swing at a lot of pitches that are out of the zone, and I'd rather face him than face other guys. But, you know, Keisuke Kondo was playing in that series, and he had a couple hits. I don't know. I don't know that there's a big intimidation. I mean, Brandon Laird, he is leading the league in home runs, and I don't know how much you can pitch around him and still get away with it, or how much you want to face him in situations. So I think they had enough of an intimidation factor. I mean, they won the series, and he did hit a home run, and so did Sho Nakata.
Yeah, I was actually kind of more interesting to hear how you described it without me resorting to any pejoratives. So anyway, so okay, interesting. I think the other thing that, well, anyway, I'll mention, since I guess this is the proper point, is what I've noticed the last couple of weeks is the Hawks have played actually quite a bit better than the Fighters. They don't have a better record.
I was going to say that it doesn't show.
No, they don't. The Fighters' record is slightly better.
Yeah, I've made this argument in the past that a team can play well and it doesn't show up in the wins and losses.
But they've basically brought a lot more to the table. And I think this is a thing that, you know, the Hawks have. And I think this is, you know, we talked about Ichikawa and Rick Vandenhoek. There's this feeling that, like, oh, okay, you know, we got more guys to come up. You know, if the Fighters, you know, and the contrast to that, and I'm interested that you didn't mention, you know, Shohei Ohtani. I guess I was surprised that he pitched eight innings in that game. But considering he's still, you know, building himself back up to the starting rotation,
right,
it was the first game in which he had hit and pitched since the blister game on July 10th.
Right, the blister game, the great blister game of July.
That's right, the great blister game of 2016. And the interesting thing is that Young Daikong, or Yo Daikong, depending on whether you use his Japanese name or his Chinese name.
Right.
Came off the bench and saved the game. He kept them from Hawks from having a one out double. I think it was the sixth inning, but don't press me on that.
Yeah, it was later in the game. Yeah,
and then of course he prevented the Hawks from having a sayonara win in the ninth inning by going back from playing shallow center field to cut off the run at the plate. the winning run at the plate to running back and catching a deep, big high deep fly to center field, which was quite a good run.
Yeah, I thought, you know, off the bat it was Tomoaki Egawa who hit it, and off the bat I thought that has a chance to go because,
oh, yeah.
Because you know, you look at the
you saw him running after it. I'm thinking that's the way people run when they got no chance to get it.
Well, or they're not sure. They're not
exactly.
Sure, and I don't think he was sure, but it was a floater. I thought it was to deep center, and
it
was high, and I didn't think he was going to catch it because I thought it was going to be off the wall.
Well, I didn't think it was going to be off the wall. I thought it was going to be. I didn't think he'd be able to get back fast enough, but he did, and then of course it spun him around, and he still tracked it really well.
Right,
you know, from looking, you know, he did. It was a pretty good catch. I mean, it wasn't Willie Mays, but it was pretty darn good. And the interesting thing about that is that was his first game in 5 days. Now, I heard from his agent about 10 days ago.
Which you talked about here.
Right. And there was an issue between him and the team, and basically he was saying that the team wouldn't give him a day off. And so I didn't know what the story was, but my colleague in Sapporo asked him on Saturday, and I didn't hear about it until I think I noticed the story after we did the podcast. Basically, he was in pain and he wasn't going to ask for a day off. He was basically saying, I'm really in pain. I really hurt. And he could play. And so basically they made the decision that, well, he can play. It's going to take a month to heal. He's got an off season. Okay. He can play kind of well enough. So he's going to play. And until he says he can't play.
Okay.
And he wasn't going to do that. So my guy went up there and asked the question, and everybody and their brother had the story about Yang Daikon suddenly not being in the lineup after playing for a month with two cracked ribs.
Right.
And so he got 5 days off, and then he came back, and apparently he was quite happy to have a little breather. And
so were his cracked ribs.
Yeah, I'll bet they were. But he, you know, the first catch, which, as I said, I believe was in the sixth inning, he slammed into the outfield wall, which is how he cracked the ribs on the first
place.
Well,
yeah, I thought he kind of hit it with his foot and ran up the wall more than
it was
a risky venture because you don't know what you're going to do until after you catch the ball.
Now, some of what's going on is that with the team is... I sensed there was some frustration on the part of the team as well as the agent because Young is in his walk year,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's an undercurrent of, you know, he should be playing all out for the team, which I think he was, and I think for Young it's a little bit of like, A, not only does it hurt, I'm not playing to the level that people expect me to.
Right.
And I don't want to go out there and play halfway, which I don't think he can. I don't think he doesn't really have a halfway switch.
He's got an on switch and an off switch. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think there is some faction in that discussion, and it may have been because of the agent's involvement that there are people who are saying, well, basically, agent wants him to have good numbers. Doesn't want him playing when he's not hitting really well, because it's going to influence his, you know, his numbers for the season and his walk year.
Yeah, get out of here, agent. Yeah,
exactly. So anyway, so there was that frustration on all. There was frustration on all sides. There was frustration on the part of the fighters. There was frustration on the part of the trainer, there was frustration on the part of Young and on his agent. So it was kind of an awkward situation. I don't think there was any evil intent anywhere, but it was, you know, awkward with a capital A.
Right. So then, you know, they got the win. Anthony Bass wasn't able to close it out. So skipper Hideki Kuriyama dug around in his bullpen and came out with Keisuke Tanimoto, who's normally a sixth or seventh inning guy. And he comes in with runners on base and closes it out. So that was good. So then in game two... I thought, okay, this is a game the Hawks are going to win. They got out early with a home run off of Kohei Arihara. And we had documented his struggles, him having lost six straight decisions, having not won since sometime in July. He looks awful. He might have a dead arm. He had a tryout with on the set of The Walking Dead as a part of a zombie.
I saw that.
He wasn't
half bad.
And then he comes back and he wasn't half bad on this night. Obviously they got out to the early lead, the Hawks did, and then Masahiko Morifuku, the left-handed reliever, comes on in the sixth inning, and he gets out of this bases-loaded jam that reminded me of the 2011 Japan series against the Dragons. I think it was Game 4, and he comes on, and I'm going to use a more recent magician, not Houdini, but David Blaine, kind of a magic trick. And he gets out of the situation in the Japan series, and he did the same thing in this game. He a bases loaded situation, got a tapper back to the mound, homed the first double play, and then gets the next batter to get out of the inning. And I thought, okay, the Hawks are on their way, and then they can't figure it out. And I thought, here's the thing, as I said when Kimiyasu Kudo took over as skipper of the Hawks, I said, look, he's got the keys to a very fine luxury car, and all he's got to do is put gas in and drive it, and he did, and they won the Japan series, blah, blah, blah. Now it looked like in this game, once they got behind, that they started to press, and they were tight, and I don't think, I mean, you know, they were, I don't know, the camera operators on TV, maybe they're just taking advantage of Kudo, because last year he just looked so enthusiastic and happy with all the reactions he had to good things that were happening on the field, and he was a compelling subject. And so now when they lose games, and I even took a picture one time, it was so funny, he's making scrunchy faces, he's got these perplexing looks, he's trying to game plan, it looks like, with his coaches sometimes in terms of what to do. And I don't want to point the finger at him, because I think he really is doing a good job and has done a good job. But I think they looked like they were feeling the pressure in this series.
I don't know if they were feeling the pressure. I think they were a little overconfident in this series.
Huh.
And I think they're very confident team. And but I think the Fighters kind of, those two good starts kind of took it out of them, kind of like they did in, I think it was in August when they swept them. And they're sort of like on, who are these guys? It was like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It's like, you know, we're the Hawks. They're not supposed to be able to do this to us.
Yeah, the Fighters got swept up in Sapporo, right?
The Hawks were swept in Fukuoka.
Right, right, right.
I believe the Hawks beat them up pretty good in Sapporo.
I thought it
too.
Was 2 out of 1, 2 out of 3.
2 out of 3, they
yeah,
did.
Yeah.
So anyway, no, I think they were overconfident. I thought they were, you know, we've been playing better than they have. We're ready. Otani's still coming back. Arihara's been on a bad stretch. We're ready to kick some butt. And, you know, it didn't work out that way, although the first game was razor tight and the Hawks didn't really deserve to lose. But, you know, the only Fighters runs were 2-run first inning homer, second inning homer, I believe. And
Brandon Laird, yes.
Brandon Laird, right. So, the second game was not as close, but here's the thing. I didn't like some of the bench choices he made sort of the end. It looked like he was sort of like he had better options to do before the game was over. I mean, I didn't like some of those choices. That's not huge. I know his bullpen crew is not the one he wants. Yota Igarashi's been deactivated, of course. Edison Barrios has not been effective this year. It's Robert Suarez and of course, you know, everybody's go-to guy, Dennis Sarfate, who got his Pacific League record. He broke his Pacific League record with his 42nd save.
That would have been today then.
That would have been today. So they're interesting. Now, one of the interesting things that you mentioned is a Morifuku, and I was thinking, wow, Morifuku's numbers look really good this year. You know, he's better than ever. And of course, the obvious thing is when you look at it is, you know, he's a sidearm lefty, and you know, he started out as basically facing lefties.
Right.
But he was so good that he got more and more time facing right-handed batters, and he wasn't as good. But he was still okay.
That slider, yeah.
Yeah. So, but last year he got hit pretty good. And this year he's basically, I think he's faced three right-handed hitters this year.
Okay. Yeah.
And because his walks went from like one and a third per inning to like 0.4.
Yeah. So that happens when, yeah, when the matchup's so in your favor.
Exactly. Now he's really in his element. So, you know, I think that that's one of the choices they had. So, yeah, I think the Hawks are kind of interesting. I'm really interested in this race, but the Hawks really have run out of time. I mean, the Fighters, as of Saturday, the Fighters' magic number to clinch the Pacific League pennant is 5. Between the two of them, they have 11 games to play.
Yeah, not much time. So, yeah,
not much time. So it's looking like the Climax Series is going to go through Sapporo.
Yeah. And the Lotte Marines, they locked up third place today with an extra inning win over the Buffaloes. So that means that they will be traveling to the second place team, probably Fukuoka. Where they've had some pretty good postseason success, if you ask me.
Well, 2010, past. Yeah, 2005.
Yep. So, I mean, they've been able to do it before, so that should be fun. Let's look at the Central League real quick. Just want to congratulate Rami Khan, Alex Ramirez, for getting his Bay Stars into the team's first CLCS with a 3-1 win over the Carp on Monday. And they swept the Giants in their final two games of the season, finishing up today. On Saturday, and so they're one and a half games back, you know, going into Sunday's action. So who knows? I still don't think they have much of a chance. The Giants really have to lose a lot of games for them to overtake them, but there's still a chance. So we're saying there's a chance. So and then I did see a GG story, and I saw that Jason Koskrie tweeted it out that Ramichan signed his contract for, I mean, he had a 2-year deal, but they promised to bring him back for next year. And then
they're under no obligation.
No obligation to honor that contract.
Well, they have to honor the contract, but they don't mean they have to use him as the manager.
Right.
They can give him the money and say, take a hike.
Right. And then the Bay Stars are also going to bring back J-Lo, Jose Lopez, who at times this year he looked like he was also on the studios of The Walking Dead. But you look at his numbers now, and he's got 33 homers. He's got 92 RBIs, which I think are a huge reason why he's going to be coming back. Mm-hmm. And he has a decent glove. I mean, he hasn't hit for average this year. It's a real stumper because he's in the stadium where we as observers probably expect him to do a little bit more, but he doesn't strike out a lot. He only has 75 strikeouts.
Yeah, a couple of things. I think one of the things I mentioned is that the Bay Stars are going to be over 500 against the Central League this year.
For the first time since 2005?
2001.
Shoot, I missed.
Nope, because 2005 they were over 500 against the Pacific League. And under 500 against the Central League, right, in the first year of Interleague. Okay, and the past 4 weeks, the Bay Stars have had the best starting pitching in NPB.
Yeah, you know, their pitching started out obviously really well, and that would carry them early on, and then it kind of dropped off, and then the batting kind of picked up in the middle there a little bit, and they were winning games with the bat, especially in the second half here. And then again, we've seen improved starting pitching or improved outings by the starters.
Well, the reason I said that is because over the last 4 weeks, they've had the longest average starts in NPB, longer than the Hawks, tied with the Yomiuri Giants for the highest quality start percentage, and second in ERA and NPB to the Carp starters.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of impressive.
Yeah. So, yeah, the two wins they had against the Giants were... Exactly. I went out to Jingu a week and a half ago, and basically they said, look, when Taketoshi Gomez Goto said, look, when we're behind, it's like, yeah, so?
Right.
And basically he said, you know, if we think, you know, if we're behind late in the game, we think that if we can get the lineup around to our third, fourth, and fifth hitters,
right,
then we've got a chance to come from behind.
Yeah.
They are definitely a positive group. So I really enjoy watching them play. It's going to be a lot of fun seeing the Bay Stars and the Giants in the Climax Series.
Right, and this is going to be a matchup in the postseason of two guys who were former teammates who are mm-hmm. also first-year managers.
Right.
In Ramichan and Yoshinobu Takahashi of the Giants. So it should be fun, a good watch.
Mm-hmm.
All right, making a four-steam transition, I want to talk about the individual awards that are coming up now. Hayato Sakamoto, of the shortstop of the Giants, is looking to become the first shortstop in Central League history to win a batting title. And I've seen this the past month, and I hadn't brought it up because I couldn't believe it. But the more I looked, the more I said, oh, gosh, I've never seen, these guys don't hit 330, 340. And then the seasons that they do, some other guy has always, had an incredible season. So it just got washed out. And so here he is battling for that crown. It's amazing.
Yeah, we certainly did have guys who were capable. And I guess the most likely ones would have been Kenjiro Nomura
mm-hmm.
and Yoshihiko Takahashi, his predecessor with the Hiroshima Carp, were both basically high average hitting shortstops. So, playing in hitters' parks, and it just didn't happen. The cards didn't fall right for him because they were certainly capable.
Yeah. So it looks like he's going to be able to win this. I think Seiya Suzuki of the Carp is the only guy who has a chance, and he doesn't really have a chance. He's going to have to get a hit in almost every at-bat, and Sakamoto's going to have to not get any hits, and I don't see that happening.
No, Sakamoto's, he's locked in right now.
Yeah, he has been fantastic. So in the stolen base race, it's Tetsuto Yamada who is out on top, and
he has a chance to repeat as the Central League stolen base leader.
Right, and he's basically got his triple three, his three. So I say three, and I always joke because you've done this to me. Yes, go ahead.
I hate that.
Yes, I know.
I know. Now you hate it. You should hate it too.
No, I don't hate it. I hate you for doing it to me. You say it's the triple three that has no three in it, but they all start with the number three. So it's 300, and then 30, and then 30.
And one of them starts with a decimal point.
I'm going with Tetsuto. He's going to get on. He's going to at least draw his walk so that if there's nobody on in front of him, he can steal a base. And I like that. I like him to win that award. Now,
The other thing is kind of interesting is that while Kosuke Tanaka is on his heels, two stolen bases behind him going mm-hmm. into Saturday's games, Yamada isn't even on the. I don't know if he's even in the top 10 of being caught stealing.
Oh.
He in fact is not. He hasn't been caught stealing four times this year.
Yeah.
Tanaka's 28-18.
Wow.
Which is like you can smell it from here. How do you get all those runs?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's
the home runs that he's scoring on where he can walk home. That's how he's getting all those
Yamada's
runs.
Well, Yamada's got 94 walks, which is new for him because he didn't lead in walks last year.
Yeah. So. Let's look at the home runs in the Central League. Obviously, Yoshitomo Tsutsugo of the DeNA Bay Stars with 43. Looks like he's going to win the home run title,
yep.
And that's good for him. It'll be his first, right?
Yes.
And Tetsuto Yamada with 38 right behind him. And
although, of course, Yamada's a the Carp have the Swallows have a few games left, and Yamada's a guy who can hit two a game too. So
he can hit three a game if they're playing at home.
Indeed.
So that's not a done deal, but it'll be fun to watch. And then, I had a discussion with a reporter earlier this season, and he was talking about how Tsutsugo has been able to hit his home runs to left field and hit with more authority, hit the ball and drive it better to left field than he has mm-hmm. in the past. And I said, because the pitchers are looking to pitch him that way. And I think when Alex Ramirez took over and said, hey, look, I want you to work on this in batting practice. I want you to work on this in your sleep. And I want you to work on this in games. Hit the ball hard to left field because they're going to be pitching you away. That's how they can reduce your power. And you know, it's no shock to me. I think he always had that power to left field. I just don't think he was expecting that much, that many pitches to go out there. And so you see recently, and I mean in the second half of the season recently, people have, they just don't know where to pitch him. You know, they throw him away, and when he's looking, he can drive that ball out. So they're starting to come in now, and they're missing, and he's driving the ball to right field. So they're just in
catch 22. He's pretty open-minded.
Open-minded, open stances. So, and it looks like he, you know, he's got 108 RBIs. Takahiro Arai of the Carp has 101, so it looks like he can at least be a double crown winner this year with the home runs and the double RBIs. My phrase from like 3 or 4 years back. Yeah, all right, so let's take a look at the Pacific League. Batting looks like Katsuya Kakunaka of the Lotte Marines is going to take the
wow, his second career batting championship. Wow.
Yeah, and again, this is a guy. What was he? Was
Independent league guy.
An indie league guy who came into MPB. So any team could have had him if they just would have scouted well and just, you know, taken a look right there
for
you.
Well, you know, I asked him about that and he said, well, first of all, you know, nobody drafted me and I wasn't the guy. I wasn't going to ever get a deal from a corporate league team. Nobody wanted me. So the independent league was the only thing I could do. And I got some good, I had a coach I worked with well, and then one of the Lotte coaches, the Lotte has a big, presence down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, they were paying attention and they drafted him, I believe, third. And he had a great, good fortune to have a lot of time with a very well-respected batting coach, Eiji Kanemura.
Mm-hmm.
And, he gives a lot of the credit to him. So that's my 30-second feature on Katsuya Kakunaka.
All right, and then Brandon Laird looks like he's going to win the home run mm-hmm. title. Got to have a little bit of a fight with Ernesto Mejia, mm-hmm. who didn't name his son Homer because there's too many
that's
of
right.
those. Yeah,
we
that was
call
a good
it
joke.
Homers are too common.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I heard you laughing so hard in your you know, sort of on the inside.
No, that was a good one. I, you know, luckily I got the joke. You know.
Well, there's always a first time,
that's
man.
Step
now
one.
That's proof. That was it. Red letter date. John gets Jim's joke.
So yeah, Laird's got 38, and then. Mm-hmm. Mejia with 35, so there's still time. You know, Mejia could have one of those games, and Brandon could fold under the pressure or something.
Oh, what else have we got? 97 runs by Hideto Asamura. That's going to lock up the runs.
I tell you what I like is the stolen base race between Yoshio Itoi and Yuji Kaneko, and they're both at 53 today after.
And I think Itoi is actually 53 years old. So
hashtag high heat.
That's what his body looked like last year. But boy, he's
53
playing
reversed. He's 35. Yes, okay. Yeah, he did look. He did move a little bit like he was at least in his 40s at the beginning of the season.
Mm.
He was probably still frozen because they start the season so early and.
Ha ha ha! Yes, indeed.
Camp is in the middle of
winter.
Well,
not only do they both have 53, did they start Saturday with 53 stolen bases? They were both caught stealing 17 times.
So they've had their share of outs.
Yeah,
on the
that
bases.
Is symmetry. Mm. And what else? A kind of interesting one. Nakashima, of course, a fighter, is leading the Pacific League, and I think he has more sacrifice bunts than. Some teams.
Yeah, I read somewhere that 60, right?
Okay.
It's quite a lot.
Yuki Nagita's out, but he could still win the walks, lead the league in walks over Akira Nakamura of the Hawks, so Hawks going to win that one. Yeah, interesting stuff. So
But
on
the
base
thing,
percentage, he's going to win too. 446, easy. Easy peasy.
But the thing I really wanted to talk about and why I was looking at all these leaders was because the Sawamura Award for the best pitcher in Japan.
It's not the best pitcher
I'm
in
sorry,
Japan.
I'm sorry. For the pitcher who is deemed most like Sawamura.
Yeah, it's sort of like for the prototypical. It's for like the most prototypical hard throwing starting pitcher.
Right. And my contention is that there is no Sawamura Award winner. And, you know, I'd be happy to give the honor to Shohei Ohtani, But I don't think he, you know, since he's been relegated, he had been relegated to DH duty for so long.
Yeah.
Instead of relegated to the bullpen. Relegated to the bullpen like other good pitchers.
Relegated to DH. I mean,
he's
that's
relegated
sort of like,
to DH.
Well, you know, that's like in the 2013 season when they relegated Vladimir Ballantyne to the number four spot.
But, you know, I looked at most of the guys and I came up with a couple names who are close, but I just don't think they're going to get it. One is Chris Johnson of the Carp. He's got 15 wins. He's got 180 and a third innings pitched, 141 strikeouts. His ERA is 2.15, three complete games, two shutouts, a winning percentage of 682. But he really doesn't make the benchmarks. And the last time, when's the last time there was a foreign pitcher who won the Sawamura Award?
1964.
Gene Baki.
Of the Central League champion Hanshin Tigers. Kind of rolls off your tongue.
So, yeah, so many of our listeners, I mean, tweet in and let us know if you were born at that time, because. Actually,
John
I wasn't. Yes, I
John
actually was
wasn't.
Not.
Okay, John wasn't.
So I don't see Chris Johnson breaking that. And then another guy is...
I do.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
Because?
Because, basically, Chris Johnson is missing... Okay, basically, there are two benchmarks. There's seven benchmarks, as you said.
Altogether, yeah.
Yes, 15 wins, 25 starts, 2.5 ERA, a 600 winning percentage, 10 complete games, 200 innings pitched.
Not even close on the complete games.
150 strikeouts.
He's like
now,
five starts away from the 200 inning plateau.
No, he's about three starts. That would be three starts, and he's not going to get there. But my point being is, first of all, 25 starts doesn't matter except in a season like this when you have Shohei Ohtani who has 16.
Okay.
So pretty much everybody gets 25 starts. That's almost a non sequitur. The 10 complete games is also a non sequitur unless you have somebody like, you know, in consideration like Hideaki Wakui or something who will have eight or nine a year. Okay, except for those two, except for him, it don't matter. Because nobody's, you know, if I go back and look, like five, exactly. We've got one, two, three, four guys with five. So it doesn't really matter. So that you basically can throw out the complete games. You can throw out the starting pitching. Now the innings pitched is interesting because he's close. The strikeouts, he's close. So basically, he runs well past the 600 winning percentage. There's a couple of guys with 15 wins, but nobody's got his winning percentage. His ERA is fine. He's close in almost everything. I think, of course, you know, you have to understand also that this is a Yomi Uri award. So it tends to be a little stodgier and old fartier than other awards.
Old fartier. I'm just looking at it and I'm saying I don't see it.
I think if
he had made the benchmarks, you know, this is a foreign pitcher, right? I think they're going to say you need to hit more of the benchmarks than not, and you need to hit him hard. And I don't think, I'm not seeing it. I see a couple of them he's hit hard.
What I see is the really good record. And, you know, these are old pitchers, so they like that the winning record. But I think, you know, they'll say, oh, the strikeouts. He could conceivably hit 100. I think if he strikes out nine guys, which is not inconceivable, if he strikes out nine guys, especially that seems to be what he was focused on his last start, then he'll have five of the benchmarks and you know, and he'll be, let's say he has a complete game. Okay.
Another one that still leaves him six short.
Yeah. Well, the complete game, nobody cares because it's between him and guys who have five.
Right.
They can't. Yeah. But the point is they can't really compare. They really have to throw out the benchmark because nobody's even close. This is the way the game is.
1964, man. That's all I got to say. All right, we got to roll along here.
Indeed. I mean, they could just, of course, do a, you know, if he was outrageously qualified, because it's a Yomiuri Award, they could still do what they did with the Shoriki Award in 2002 and say, oh, we have, you know, obviously the best player in Japan's a black foreigner. Wait, let's give it to the manager.
All right.
Let's give it to the manager who did nothing. Okay. So, sorry about that.
Okay. All right. So, making a two-seam transition, Daisuke Miura of the Yokohama Bay Stars is retiring. I call him Pitching Elvis because of that hair.
Because of the hair. Yeah, his hair is better than Elvis's ever was.
It's a shame. You got to put a baseball cap on that rug.
I know. It is indeed. It's
an absolute waste.
He should. I know. He should have an exemption. Give him sunglasses and let him go out and pitch without the cap.
Sunglasses and a leather jacket and say, hey, and it should say Fonzie on the back. Sorry for all you millennials who won't get that. Yeah, yeah.
No, Fonzie can't compare. Yeah. His pompadour is a work of art.
Yeah. So he says he announced on Tuesday he was going to hang it up. And his presser was great because you could tell he had made peace with it. The decision a long time ago, he was matter of fact about it. He wasn't emotional, and you know, the Japanese press, they can ask you every question, and it's just like they were pounding the strike zone like Roger Clemens. They just kept throwing him fastballs, and he kept swinging, kept knocking them, at least fouling them off, hitting them, you know, getting hits and everything. And then all of a sudden, somebody asked him the magic question, and his tears watered up. You know, he kind of got emotional. Didn't let it dribble down his face because he's too cool for that, but. You said he was hall worthy when you started tweeting about it on Tuesday, and I just cannot wrap my mind around that. He was really good, and he might deserve to go because of his longevity. But I never thought of him. Listen to me. Let me make my statement first.
I'm listening to you.
You know, you're
not here
screaming.
Before.
No, he was never. I never thought of him as a dominant pitcher for a long period of time. Maybe he had a couple good years. He's got 183 wins, which is really good considering he was playing in a hitter's paradise of a park.
With a team with no offense. He was
with a team with no offense and no defense.
That's not true.
When I took this job, so this was 2005 to 2010 when they started that stretch of finishing in last all the time, their defense was pathetic. Their infield defense.
Well...
Yes, it was.
Yeah. no, I think as long as Takaro Ishii was there, they were okay. Of course, he was there. He wasn't there that much longer. The other thing is, first of all, you know, as I said on Twitter, basically, he's very comparable to pitchers who have Hall of Fame careers, in the sense that you can say, okay, now you can say, oh, he was just hanging on, but basically. You know, you have to basically forget, and I don't mean forget, like give him credit for, you know, his being useless for the last 3 years. I just write those off as zeros. He doesn't get any credit for that at all.
Yeah,
all
the last time he was effective as a starter was 2012, and that was, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that basically from about 1999 to 2009, the only pitcher in the Central League who was better than him during that period was Hiroki Kuroda. And Kuroda, because Kuroda was a little better, not a lot, but a little better, and because both of them played in parks that raised their ERAs slightly, and it only raised their ERAs slightly because they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, instead of having winning records every year, they often were 500 or barely. You know, they would have good years when they were quite a bit over 500, but they played for teams that had terrible offenses, and they were just the two. They were the two best pitchers in the Central League. The fact that nobody noticed it because nobody paid attention. But, you know, if you look at the guys, they were better. I mean, he was better than Maki. They were both better than Maki Hara, who will get some votes for the Hall of Fame. They were both better than Kuwata.
Okay.
I mean, no doubt about it. Now, And then the other thing you look at is how often does a guy lead the league in sort of different categories, like strikeouts and complete games and shutouts. And he led innings pitched. Mura led the league 11 times. Now, these are things you don't, these aren't the things that you get when you are what John calls a compiler. The number of, you know, who leads.
What John calls. Well, just whack me with the morning newspaper.
Well, you do. That's a favorite word of yours, a compiler.
Well that's for a guy who's in the league for 20 years, and all of a sudden you look up and, oh, yeah, by the way, he's got 200 wins now. Well, yeah.
I'm not big on the win total.
Yeah, I'm just using that as a number.
But he's not a compiler because he's a guy who was one of the best pitchers in the league for a prolonged period of time. I mean, it was the fact that it was understated because he was with Yokohama and they were the worst team in the league for, you know, six of those years. When, you know, they were vying for Hiroshima with the title for the worst team in the league for about a decade. So, I think in terms of what he actually did. Now, he doesn't strike you as being a Hall of Fame pitcher because of the wins.
No, you know, no. His career ERA, and I know he's pitching in this, like I said, a hitter's paradise of a right. park. It's just, it's not fair. But that's a really high ERA. And here's the thing for me is more than half his career, he's not a dominant pitcher. So he had a you gave me a 10-year stretch, but he's been hanging around for the other two, maybe two or three years. So you can take that away. He's just half of his career. He's just another guy.
I'm saying you took the last 6 years and erased him. He's still a Hall of Fame pitcher because he doesn't. That's when he went. That's like taking away from what he did before. By what he did later. I mean, no, he's not getting any credit for what comes later. I'm saying he deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. If he'd retired in 2012, he would have deserved to be in the Hall of Fame.
All right, well, I wouldn't vote him in. You can send your complaints to YAKYU.
I don't have to send my complaints.
Not you.
I'm putting them on my ballot, baby.
Not you. All right, some notes. There are a lot of retirements. The soft top tossing lefty Masaru Takeda of the Fighters is also done. He was among a looked like a race to get out of the game we saw this past week. And Shinobu Fukuhara of the Tigers, he had a tear-filled presser to say sayonara as a player. That was I almost got tears on me just watching that on TV.
you have to turn that setting off on your television.
Something, and then Michihiro Ogasawara. He's the farm manager for the Dragons. Looks like he's going to be promoted to manager of the Dragons next season. So they're working on that. There have been stories the past couple days on that. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we got an MP3 from Mike in D.C.
Hey, John and Jim. One of my favorite players in MPB also happens to have one of the best nicknames, Okawari-kun. From the Cebu Lions. Are there any other Japanese baseball players, past or present, who have particularly great nicknames that you liked, or do you think a few players deserve nicknames? Thanks.
All right, excellent, excellent. So what do you think, Jim? Some nicknames that you are at least favorite nicknames of yours,
well,
and then some from
past. I guess the first one I remember coming to Japan was the Orient Express.
Oh, I remember that.
Kuo Taiyuan, who was known in Japan as Kakutaigen.
Kakutaigen, yeah.
Yeah, although he got that in the Los Angeles Olympics, but that's another story. And the second one I became aware of when I started following Japanese baseball was Sunday Choji. Sunday Choji Murata of the Lotte Orions. He was the first Japanese pitcher, and he got that after he came back from... He became the first Japanese pitcher to undergo Tommy John surgery. Mm. And so they only pitched him on Sunday. And this is when it was basically the pitchers went every fifth or sixth. I would guess every sixth day usually then.
Right. All right. So for the first for me is Godzilla. That was Hideki Matsui. I started thinking this was a fun exercise because we got this question a while back, but I really hadn't thought about it. And so this week I wanted to get it on the show. and I started thinking about it. So I sat around thinking, you know, day to day, and then I actually did a search just today, but this was after I like came up with all my favorites, and Hideki Matsui Godzilla was up there. The biggest name, I think, in weight and reality for me has to be Dave Okubo, because, I mean, no one calls him Hiromoto, his first name. In fact, I find it difficult at times to remember whether it's Motohiro or Hiromoto, because I never say his name. Everybody calls him Dave. He's on the Pro Yaku News at night, and all the other casters actually just call him Dave. They don't even use San, you know, using Mister. They just say, "Hey, Dave."
which is what it means.
So I think that's the one for me that really stands out, and then the one right behind that is Mister. For Shigeo Nagashima, Mr. Baseball is what they call him, Mr. Baseball, but they just call him Mr. And that one goes. And then one of my other favorites, I have so many now, was the Manri Otoko, or the Bases Loaded guy. Or I guess you could call him the Grand Slam guy. That's what I saw people mentioning him as. And that was Norihiro Komada, who started with the Giants and then played with the Bay Stars, or I guess I don't know where they Bay Stars by that time.
They were the Bay Stars, 1994,
And so they called him Manri Otoko, and
because
he hit
a grand slam in his first at bat.
Yeah, he hit well, but there's so many nicknames. There's Michihiro Guts Ogasawara of the Fighters, who you used to call
the Nippon Hammer.
The Nippon Hammer, the Shunsuke.
That was before he became a Giant and a Dragon.
Before he became the Giant and a Dragon. Shunsuke Watanabe with the Lotte Marines, and used to call him
the Submarine.
The Submarine. There's Daimajin.
Daimajin, indeed. I thought you were going to forget about him. Oh. Tomohiro Johnny Kuroki.
Johnny Kuroki. There's Aniki, who's the manager of the Hanshin Tigers. Tomoaki Kanemoto. There's Wolf. Do you remember Wolf?
No.
Yoshinobu, that's his nickname, is Wolf. Yoshinobu Takahashi. How could I recall?
Indeed. Tomohiro Johnny Kuroki we had, and Tomohiro Ryan Ogawa.
Right, a current player.
Nabe Q for Hisanobu Watanabe.
Yep.
Then we had the two Godzillas, the Gojiras. We had number 55, who won a batting championship as a 27-year-old in his first full season in NPB, Shigenomu Shima. Mm-hmm. He was the Red Godzilla because he wore 55 and played for the Carp. Mm-hmm. And then there was Seiichi Uchikawa, who in his breakthrough season, and because of his prominent mandible,
<It's> John Wayne,
was known as basically Chinzilla.
Chinzilla, yeah.
Agojira, which means the Chin Godzilla.
Here's a guy you would remember, Boom Boom Maru.
Boom Boom Maru, all right. Of course, Takahiro Ikeyama.
Of the Swallows,
I'm glad you brought him up. Yeah, he was one of my favorite ball players.
And another recent one, Bakabon.
Shichijo. Yeah, I remember him. Tensai Bakabon, because of his expression.
Well, it's a goofy face. It's indeed. Goofy head.
And we have one now, which is my favorite. One of my favorite guys is Taketoshi Gomez Goto. And I asked him, why Gomez? And he said, well, you know, our captain, Takahiro Ishii, said to me one day, you look Hispanic. mind if I call you Gomez? Okay. Oh, the last one I'll have to say. There was a ball player kind of who had a very tragic ending with suicide, but his name was Oze with the Oryx, and he was an up-and-coming outfielder until he departed us during spring training. And his nickname was given to him by Ichiro Suzuki, because when he heard it, you know, in the camp off-season when the Oryx guys would train with Ichiro, he says, what's your name? Jose?
Yeah, there's so many. I'm sure we left some out. There's guys from, like, you know, way, way back in the past who I'm not all that familiar with. And, you know, you guys can tweet us or put them on the Facebook page or whatever you want to do. But give us some of your favorites, because I'm sure we left a lot of them out. Send them to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com.
Indeed.
Tweet us with some high heat questions at #highheat@JBWpodcast. Or you can go to Facebook and leave us notes, comments, whatever you want to. Leave it there. Look for us on iTunes. And we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for listening.